Adi Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Nam Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Praise Shri Prabhu Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adwaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopina Shai Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaura Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharane. Nirvasesa Sunyavadi Paskatya Desatarane. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitamstam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Vanchakalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanan Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So today is December 28th, 2022 in Hawaii. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 8, a description of the character of Bharat Maharaj, Text 20. So this is prose. I'll just read through the Sanskrit and then we can do the word for word together. Api svid akrita sukritam agatyamam. Sukha yishyati harina raja kumaro vivida ruchira darshaniya nija mirga daraka vinodair asantosham swanam apanudan. Api svit. Whether it will. Akrita sukritam. Who has never executed any pious activities. Agatya. Coming back. Mom. To me. Sukhayishyati. Give pleasure. Harina Raja Kumara. The deer who was just like a prince because of my taking care of it exactly like a son. Vivida. Various. Ruchira. Very pleasing. Darshaniya. To be seen. Nija. Own. Mriga Dadaka. Benefiting the calf of the deer. Vinodai. By pleasing activities. Asantosham. The unhappiness. Swanam. Of his own kind. Apanudan. Driving away.
driving for me.
Muted. Unmuted.
Srila Prabhupada's translation. That deer is exactly like a prince. When will it return? When will it again display its personal activities, which are so pleasing? When will it again pacify a wounded heart like mine? I certainly must have no pious assets, otherwise the deer would have returned by now. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Out of strong affection, the king accepted the small deer as if it were a prince. This is called moha. Moha, of course, means illusion. Due to his anxiety over the deer's absence, the king addressed the animal as though it were his son. Out of affection, anyone can be addressed as anything. So again, the translation, that deer is exactly like a prince. When will it return? When will it again display its personal activities, which are so pleasing? When will it again pacify a wounded heart like mine? I certainly must have no pious assets, otherwise the deer would have returned by now. So I want to focus here on Prabhupada's statement in the purport that out of affection, anyone can be addressed as anything. And this reminded me of Bhagavatam 2.2.3, where the world is called Namasu, or the world of names. Prabhupada says there in the purport that the world is a jugglery of names only. So what is this world? Bhumir apanalo vayu kammano buddhir evacha. It's simply earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Mind, intelligence, and ego. Or we can say it is sattvagun, rajagun, tamagun. And these mix together in different ways. Just like you can take wheat and water and salt and mix it together in different ways and form many different things. Or you can take milk and sugar, mix them in different ways and make many different things. I remember when I first stayed overnight at a Hare Krishna temple, so the devotees gave me a sandesh. And I had been a professional cook at a Marriott hotel, and so I knew something about cooking. Anyway, I'm eating this sandesh, and I just said, "Wow, what is this?" You know, and the devotee says, "Oh, it's milk and sugar." And I'm like, "Milk and sugar? How did you make this just out of milk and sugar?" Right? And then they said, "Well, a little lemon juice." I'm like, "Oh, that's what it is." But it's so different, right? If you mix together milk and sugar, just mix them together, and then you have a sandesh, it's very different. But it's the same things. It's just mixed together in a different way. And so this whole material universe is like that. It's the same ingredients mixed together in different ways and called different names. And then again, at the dissolution, everything mixes, unmixes. That's the pradhan. In the pradhan, everything unmixes. It again goes back to its original constituent parts. And you can't tell the difference between one thing and another anymore. It's just like, you know, after we eat, whatever we've eaten, it just becomes excrement. Right? And then if we were to just like poop on the ground, and then again it goes back into earth. And you can't tell anymore, what is this, what is that? Or we can think of it like everything we eat, it's sunlight and water and earth minerals, right? That's it, just sunlight, water, and earth minerals. And they mix together in different ways. And they become, you know, mangoes and wheat and so many things. And we eat it, and then again we excrete it, and again it becomes back to its original constituents. But in the interim, we say this is wheat, this is rice, right? Or then when it becomes part of our body, we say this is a fingernail, this is hair, this is skin. And again, it merges and then back into the original elements. So it's just a name. We say at a certain point, this is a peach. And at a certain point, we say this is a nose. And at a certain point, we say this is excrement. And at a certain point, we say, oh, this is just earth. Right? But it's just a name. We're giving it at different stages. We're just at different points in its journey. We call it different things. But it's really just the same things over and over again in different forms. So it's a world of names. The thing itself isn't really a thing. It isn't really a peach. It isn't really a nose. It isn't really any of these things. It's really just earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Or you could say it's really just sunlight and water and earth. Right? Or it's really just the modes of nature. And even the modes of nature, I mean, originally it's the pradhan. It breaks up even more so. I mean, I like to think of it, and I don't know if this is totally accurate, but I like to think of it in modern scientific terms, like you have the atom is made up of protons, neutrons, and electrons, and then smaller parts also. And if those were all broken up, just like the periodic table of the elements, it's about different atoms with different configurations, right? Oxygen has a different configuration than gold. But if you break it up and there's just protons, neutrons, and electrons floating around, then there's no different elements. So wherever one wants to think of the combination and uncombination, it's just a bunch of names. Like if you had a lump of clay, you know, non-hardening clay, like children often play with, and you could shape it into different forms. Like we have a preschool here, and we have clay, and so you take the clay and you shape it into different forms, and when the clay playing time is over, then you mash up the forms and you put them back in the container. But when you've made the forms, you say, this is an elephant, this is a this, this is a that. And the same is true for our relationships. You know, in this life, we have, you know, I am a this, I am a white American woman. And in another life, you know, I'm a black Somalian man. In another life, I'm an Antarctic seal or something. You know? I mean, it's just a name. It's not actually who I am. And then I form these relationships. You are my husband, you are my wife, you are my parents, you are my children, you are my pets, this is my home, this is my stuff. And it's all a phantasmagoria. It's all just taking elements and combining them in different ways and calling them something for the brief period of time that they have that thing, and then they're not that. So we put a name on something that is not really indicative of what it is. The name is indicative of the form it is taking for a brief moment of time. I always remember how Burjan Prabhu said our whole life is 8 billionths of a second for Lord Brahma. So that's our whole life. And in this life, something has a form for a portion of that time even. And then we put a name on it and we say, that's what it is. So we Vaishnavas don't say that the world is false. The energy of the world is real. It's Krishna's energy. Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya dirachaya. It's Krishna's energy. And it's very difficult to overcome when one is in this energy. One really thinks it is what it is. One really thinks, you know, this is my son. This is my cat. I am, you know, a Slovenian man. I am a whatever. You know, we Mama Maya Dhiratya. We really believe it, Prabhupada says here, out of affection. We have affection, we have attachment, and therefore we really believe it. We want to believe it. I mean, another example, the Shastra gives the example of dreams. you know, in the dream, it's just electrical energy in the brain. And we think so many things are happening. In our modern world, it would be, you know, like a film. I mean, even if you want to take in ancient times when there was live theater, that the people portraying the actors, the actors portraying the characters, they're not the actual characters. The settings, the costumes, it's meant to take you into a world that's not actually happening on stage. But such is even more so today with modern film industry, where they create so many amazing illusions so that one is watching the film and one is thinking, you know, oh, here's some huge monster bigger than the city, you know, eating all the people. And here's somebody, you know, standing on the wing of an airplane flying in the sky, or somebody flying in the sky themselves, you know. And they're this person and that person. And out of affection, one identifies with the characters in the drama. And one actually feels something as if it's really happening. You know, you get attached to the character in the drama. And the character in the drama dies, and it's like, you know, your own dear friend dies. Just, you know, what Bart is feeling about this deer. My deer is gone. My deer is gone. You know, so you're watching this film, and you're thinking, oh, you know, my child is gone. My child has died because of something in the film, where it's just an actor, or it's just animation even, or CGI or something like that. But one is feeling like that. One is feeling, oh, this is terrible. It's like my own child is gone. So we're feeling that out of affection, out of attachment. If there's no attachment, we don't feel that way. I mean, right now, in this very moment, so many babies are being born. So many people are dying. So many people are getting a cancer diagnosis or some terrible disease diagnosis. Right now, at this moment. I mean, that's one thing about like having a lot of friends on Facebook. So I have like over 4,000 Facebook friends, and if I scroll through my feed at any particular day, somebody's had a baby. Somebody's graduated from some school and gotten a degree. Somebody's gotten engaged. Somebody's gotten married. Somebody's gotten divorced. Somebody's died. Somebody's in the hospital with a disease. Every single day. And what to speak of people we don't know. And if we don't know, if we have no affection for them, then we don't identify with it. It doesn't matter to us. But when we have some affection, then we're thinking, oh, this has happened to my dear friend. Oh, this has happened to my dear relative. So many stories in the news every day about so many terrible things happening to so many terrible people, or so many things not in the news. It doesn't affect us. But when we have some affection, when we have some attachment, then we're so affected. We can be affected for years. We all know of people, or maybe ourselves. Somebody dies, or someone gets hurt, and it bothers us for years. Right? Whereas if we really were to look at it objectively, what is really happening? It's just the modes of nature moving around. Like Krishna says in the 5th chapter and in the 13th chapter, that while we're apparently doing all these things in this world, it's just the modes of nature. But out of affection, out of attachment, we put a name on it. It's my house, it's my this, it's my that. And we're so affected. So the fact that we're so affected allows for even deeper cheating. I was thinking a lot about the power of names and how those who study psychology, they they use this power of names to manipulate us. Right? Just like we think if something costs more money, it must be of higher value. It's actually quite funny. But we all think that way. If someone says, I'll sell you a car for $300, and someone else says, I'll sell you a car for $3,000, immediately we'll think there's something wrong with the $300 car. And the same thing happens with names. So there's been many, many, many research studies done with this. One is where they took the same pain reliever, like acetaminophen, and they have one is in a brand name, like Tylenol has a brand name, that we recognize the company name, and then one is just a generic, it's just acetaminophen, or paracetamol as you call it in Europe. And they had four different categories that they were using this experiment. One was the real painkiller under a brand name. One was the real painkiller without a brand name. One was a fake, a placebo, just like sugar, no medicine, within a brand name bottle. And one was a fake placebo, no medicine, under a generic label. So what they found is that if people had a headache or backache, if they took the medicine, if they took something that had a brand name on it, like Tylenol, whether it actually had acetaminophen in it or whether it was just sugar, there's equal pain relief because it had a brand name on it. However, for something that didn't have a brand name on it, people got more relief from the real medicine than from the fake. What's also really funny is the side effects people reported. So if they took the fake, no medicine in the brand name bottle and no medicine in a bottle without a brand name, people reported more bad effects from the fake medicine without a brand name. In other words, people were thinking if it has the brand name, it's going to work better. Just like we think the $3,000 car, it must be better than the $300 car. So it didn't matter what the thing actually was. It didn't matter if it was the actual chemical medicine or just some fake thing. The efficacy depended as much on whether or not it had a particular name on it. And we know that this principle is used also by what kind of names. So there's a very famous study, you can look it up, called Kiki, K-I-K-I, and Booba, B-O-U-B-A. So they show people these two shapes, one that has rounded edges and one that has spiky, pointed edges. And they ask people, which one is Booba and which one is Kiki? And it doesn't matter what language people speak, what culture they're in. Everybody calls the sharp one Kiki and the rounded one Booba. And we associate certain names with certain qualities, even though it's just a name. And so there's all this deception going on. Just like there was this company, they were manufacturing leather in New Jersey. And they called it rich Corinthian leather. And people are thinking, oh, it's from Corinth in Europe. Rich Corinthian leather. And they were paying more for it. Well, I'm sure you're all familiar, this ice cream called Häagen-Dazs. And it has a map of Scandinavia on it. But it's just, again, made in New Jersey. I don't know what the thing is with New Jersey. It's just some ordinary ice cream. But because it looks like it has some fancy foreign name with a fancy foreign map, people buy more of it and they pay more for it. There was this company that made Jell-O pudding pops, they called it. It had no pudding in it. But because they called them pudding pops, people thought, oh, pudding, that's more healthy. And so they would buy more of it. Or there's this town in Alaska, it was called Davis, Alaska. Hardly anybody lived there, hardly anybody went there. And then they changed the name to North Pole, Alaska. And they decorate it all year long like it's Christmas. And they sell Christmas things all year long. And so now they're a big tourist attraction. Everybody wants to go to North Pole, Alaska. It's not actually the North Pole. It's 100 miles away from the Arctic Circle. But they're saying, oh, I went to the North Pole, because it has a name like that. Right? Or the big cigarette company, Philip Morris. They created these cigarettes called Dave's Cigarettes, and they told this story about how there was this man who wanted his own homegrown cigarettes and grew his own tobacco, and it was just, it was a made-up story. And people, oh yes, you know, that's what this actually is. So this is done in advertising all the time. I mean, these companies spend a lot of money researching what kind of name of a product is going to get us to think, oh yes, this is high quality, this is something I like, this is something that will fulfill my desires, by putting a particular name on it. People who have names that are easy to pronounce and easy to spell are more likely to win elections. They're more likely to get hired for jobs. They're more likely to be trusted just because they have a particular name. So this is all our illusion. Therefore, again, Bhagavatam 2.2.3 says this world is Namashu. It is just the world of names. And Prabhupada also says in the purport to 2.2.3, right, I said he said jugglery of names only. And Prabhupada said that the things in this world are no more significant than the bubble or the babble of the sea waves. So just exactly like that, a moment in time, something has a name on it, and we think, ah, yes, this is it. This is something that will satisfy me. Prabhupada also talks in that purport how we want our names preserved in history. We want someone to remember our name. And I've said this many, many times when I give classes. I ask people, how many of you know the names of your great-great-grandparents? Right, so we have 4 grandparents, right, and then we have 8 great-grandparents, and then 16 great-great-grandparents. How many of us know even one of those 16 names? What to speak of all of them? And that's our own family. Right, and my great-great-grandchildren, that's the grandchildren of my grandchildren. That's not very far from now. But they won't even remember my name. And I've had this experience with my grandchildren. They have a hard time remembering my parents' name. That would be their great-grandparents. They certainly don't remember my grandparents' name. And not only our name, they don't remember what we've done. In our own family, the grandchildren of our grandchildren will not remember our names. They will not remember what we have done. I recently was contacted by a distant relative who did a whole genealogical research into the family. I mean, she spent, I don't know, probably a couple years on this. Where everyone's buried, what were their life stories, what newspaper articles were written about them, what did they do, and all this kind of thing. And then she's prepared these detailed, intricate charts. You know, and you look it over, and okay, but you don't even remember. It doesn't mean anything, and you don't know these people. They have no value to you in your life. Prabhupada talked about this, right, after he had taken vanaprasth, and he went back to his childhood home, and he said, where are all these people now who were in my family, all my dear ones when I was a young child? He says, it's a list of names only. So that's all it is. It's a nice graph, a nice genealogical chart. And such is the case even for the majority, the vast majority of very great personalities. So much of the Bhagavatam, There's whole chapters in the Bhagavatam of genealogy. And sometimes in one verse there's 10 names, 15 names. And we usually go through it very quickly. Generally, there's no commentaries by anyone. And so sometimes in our Shastra classes, we may go through 10, 15 of these verses, each of which have 5 to 10 names, and we just read the names, and we can barely pronounce them, and we have no idea what they did. And these were some of the most significant people in the whole history of the universe. And they're just reduced to a list of names. So this is the reality. And seeing this reality is essential. The Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavatam, actually all the Vedic literatures emphasize that we have to cultivate detachment from the illusion of the material world. Again, illusion doesn't mean it doesn't exist at all. It just means it's not what it appears to be. It's something different than what it is. Like the ordinary ice cream from ordinary cows in ordinary New Jersey, and you think it's some fancy foreign thing because it has another name on it. To see the world for what it is. And this is true not only for the things and the people, it's true for our emotions. Like I was saying, you know, we feel emotions when we watch some film or see some drama or read some book. Similarly, we're feeling some emotions with our lives, which are really the same thing. It's we're the soul simply watching this drama of our lives, where it looks like this is my friend, this is my child, this is my father. But it's no different than actors in a film. And if we even want to go deeper, you know, actors in a film, it's just lights on a screen. You know, I mean, what is it? And we're feeling so many emotions from lights on a screen. So we're feeling so many emotions and so many thoughts and so much care from some combination of protons, neutrons, and electrons. You could say, Ermila, well, there's a soul there. Yeah, but the soul's just observing. What we're seeing is not really the activities of that jiva. We're all just observing. It's my late godbrother Sariputta compared it to a computer game. You know, people are playing a computer game, and they're real people sitting in their real rooms and their real chairs, but they're operating, you know, these computerized characters, where it looks like they're somebody else doing other things. And their electronic character is interacting with someone else's electronic character. And again, if those characters die or get hurt or whatever, it's not actually happening to the real person. But people feel a lot of emotion. I've watched people play, not for many years actually, but I've watched people play these games. And they get very emotionally invested. Again, Prabhupada says, out of affection, out of attachment, they get very invested. Is their character dying, or some other character dying, or getting this, or getting that? So we have to develop this detachment from the world of names. Now, in Gyan Yoga, that people simply work at developing this detachment. Neti, neti. It's not this, it's not this. Just pulling back from these materialistic thoughts and attachment and affection. To see the world as it really is. Just like when I was 10 years old, I visited Hollywood and I went on the set of a TV show that I liked to watch. And I saw what it really was. I saw that the stairs going to upstairs really went to nowhere. There wasn't really an upstairs. And I saw that what looked like magic in the TV show wasn't, you know, how they actually made things look like magic. I saw what it really was. Prabhupada says that those who are advanced in bhakti, they see the naked form of material desires. I've given the example many times of Ulysses when he went by the island of the witches, the sirens, and he was told that these witches, they're going to sing so sweetly that they will lure you to their island where they will eat you. So don't listen to their singing. So he had all the men on his ship plug their ears with wax. But he wanted to hear it. So he said, tie me to the mast and don't obey my orders. So the men who couldn't hear the sirens, they saw a desert island piled high with human bones, with witches singing. And Ulysses, who could hear them, he saw beautiful women on a lush tropical island full of pleasures. So we are meant to have detachment, to see the world as it is. It's just sattva, rajas, and tamas. It's just earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. And we are simply the observers. And it's just sticking names on things. The things in and of themselves, they're not really valuable separate from Krishna. That's where how Krishna defines Maya, seeing something valuable as separate from me. And one has this veil removed and says, oh, you know, it's really this concept that this is this and this is that is all an illusion. And one no longer has this kind of affection. One no longer thinks, oh, this little deer, it's like my son, and therefore I'm the king, and so the deer is my prince. I mean, how silly. People talk this way all the time about their animals. They have their pet dog, you know, and they talk about it, like, oh, this is my fur baby, and we're its mommy and daddy, out of affection. So this detachment has to be there if one wants to advance spiritually, because this attachment is the source of all of our suffering. All of our suffering is misidentification with this body, with this mind, with this family, with this world, just because of a bunch of names. Just because we call something something. And we think that's what it is. Now, in bhakti yoga, we cultivate this detachment, and we do cultivate this detachment, but we cultivate it alongside actual attachment to the reality. Because we understand from Bhagavad Gita chapter 15 that this world is like a reflection of an upside-down banyan tree. It's a reflection in the water where a banyan tree appears upside down because there's a real banyan tree right side up on the bank. Why do we have this ridiculous inclination to become attached to temporary bubbles in the ocean, fleeting things that have nothing to do with us? And we stick a name on it, and we become attached. Why would we do that? We would do that because as a soul, we do belong to a world of reality. We belong to a world where things are what they are. And they are what they are forever. And they are real. There are real friends. There is real family. There are real things. There's a real world. Just why do we become attached to a film? Because it reminds us of our everyday world. And we become attached to our everyday world because it reminds us of the spiritual world. Nobody would become attached to the characters in a film or a book if they didn't have a real characters in their life. And no one would become attached to our life if we didn't have our mundane life of names, if there wasn't some reality. We wouldn't have any interest. So we want to become attached to the reality. And that is the becoming attached to reality is the special prerogative of bhakti. I mean, it is a fact, through Gyan Yoga, one will develop peace through detachment, which Krishna talks about quite a lot. Being like the ocean, where the rivers of desire flow in but doesn't affect it, and therefore one achieves peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? But in bhakti, we go beyond peace, and our attachment to Krishna and detachment from Maya go on simultaneously and proportionally. As we develop attachment for Krishna, we proportionally develop detachment from Maya. That doesn't mean we don't make any direct endeavor to have detachment from Maya. That direct endeavor is part of bhakti. But it does mean that our direct endeavor to become detached from Maya is part of bhakti. That we have that detachment as part of our becoming attached to Krishna. And what is the perhaps very special attribute in bhakti of becoming attached to Krishna is we don't just see the world as some illusory bunch of names. We also see it as Krishna's energy. So instead of seeing it as falsely dear and falsely beautiful and falsely valuable because we've artificially put some name on a temporary phenomena, we see its genuine beauty and its genuine value because we see it's part of Krishna's body. We see that the jivas are dear because they're dear to Krishna, not because they have the name of my mother and father and brother and son. We see the glory of the cycle of sun and water and earth minerals producing a tree with peaches that gets digested and turns into skin and turns into excrement and turns back into soil and gives birth to a new tree. We see the beauty of Krishna there. The impersonalists, they simply stop seeing the beauty and the value in the false illusion. And they try to find everything they want just in neutral peace. But the bhaktas see genuine beauty everywhere. The real beauty. Not by, as some religionists try to do, sugarcoating the illusion with something falsely spiritual. You know, so many religions are like, you know, we're going to go to heaven and be with our families in some big family picnic eternally, you know. I mean, I guess there's something like that in Pitriloka for a while. But we're not trying to sugarcoat illusion with some our idea of God as our order supplier. But part of seeing the world as it is, we see it's not the world of names, but it is something. And what it is so much more beautiful, so much more glorious, so much more wonderful, because it's part of the beauty and the glory and the wonder of God. And when we love God, we can actually love the world. The bubbles in the ocean. But the ocean is also beautiful with its ever-changing bubbles. Or a friend of mine was recently someplace, they were out camping or something, and they were sitting around a fire and saying how grounding and peaceful it was just to watch the ever-changing flames of the fire. So the ever-changing flames of the fire, the bubbles in the water, when we see it as part of Krishna, it's wonderful. Again, this fact can be very misunderstood, as the world is wonderful because God made it for us to enjoy. That's karmakanda. Actually, jnana is higher than that. Detachment from the world is higher than I want to enjoy the world by the grace of God. But higher than that is what I want to enjoy is pleasing God. I want to enjoy pleasing Krishna. I want to enjoy loving Krishna. And when I love Krishna, naturally, I love his creation. But I love his creation as his thing. I mean, just like yesterday, I was eating at my granddaughter's house. I usually eat there in the evenings. And she had made spaghetti with sauce and tofu, fried tofu. And so her four-year-old son, when I walk in, Abhimanyu, he says, Gran-gran, I cooked the tofu. I cooked the tofu. Oh, how did you cook the tofu? Oh, I did this. I put this oil, and I put this ghee, and I put this spices, and I turned it in the pot, and I did this, and I did that. Or, you know, they have their, because I was talking about clay, you know, they in their preschool, we have a little devotee preschool here, so they have their clay, their non-hardening clay, and they take it out and they make it into forms. And, oh, Gran-Gran, I made an elephant. I made it this. And, I mean, they're little children. They don't really make anything very nicely. And then when they're done, they smash it again and they put it away. But because I love them, therefore, I think their little cooked tofu and their little elephant is wonderful. What to speak of what Krishna does? So when Krishna says, you know, I cooked this, I made this, this is mine. Oh, how wonderful. How wonderful. And really what Krishna makes is amazing. Of course, what Krishna makes in this world is nothing compared to his own eternal abode, especially on this planet, the lowest of the middle planets. I mean, what we find amazing and astonishing here, caterpillars turning into butterflies, the inner workings of the cell, amazing things. Nothing compared to the higher planets, nothing compared to Brahma's planet, nothing compared to the spiritual world. But because it's Krishna's energy and we love Krishna, therefore, we appreciate it, and therefore, we can find some service here. Yukta Vairagya. We can find some way here to connect everything with Krishna, and that is real. That is real, that is eternal. What's real and what is eternal are the bhavs, the feelings, the emotions that we have for Krishna as we deal with the world as his. That's real, not the temporary manifestations, even though we're using it for Krishna. I mean, it's not that because I use a table for Krishna, all of a sudden it's eternally a real table. But because I'm using a table for Krishna with love for Krishna, my affection for Krishna is real, and that doesn't go away. That increases and increases and increases. And then the full range of emotions that I want to have by identifying this is my house, this is my car, this is my husband, this is my mother, I actually will find in Krishna, Janaka Janani Daita Tanai Prabhu Guru Patituhu Sarvamoy. We will experience Krishna, you are my everything. So that is what we want to do. We don't want to be just simply illusioned people going through this world as if everything here is so important and has so much meaning, just this world of names. Namashu. Just a world of names, calling things like this and like that, and then taking birth again and again as an emperor to a deer. Wow. Nor do we want to be like the religionists who are doing the same thing with a little veneer of God. Oh, we're living in the world piously, and God has given us this illusion to enjoy. It's a step up thinking like that. They could go to some higher planet. Nor do we just want to be like the Gyanis who are neti neti, let me be detached and just at peace. We want to see the reality, the ultimate reality, not just the reality that it's earth, water, air, fire, ether, just the reality that it's Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas, just the reality that ultimately it's the Pradhan, just the reality that we're just the observer, but we want to see the reality beyond that. We want to see beyond that to Krishna. Just like in a computer game, one could say, well, what is it? It's a metal and plastic box. One could say it's electricity. One could say it's programming language. One could take the programming language down to ones and zeros, all of those things. Or one could say, look at the mastery of the programmer. Look at the handiwork of the programmer. And not become absorbed in the computer game, but become absorbed in the glory of the creator, the glory of he whose energy it is. So that is what we are being called to do. So, questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements. Okay, I see we have some things in the chat.
Regarding the world of names and false identities, you know, for example, I was born as Rami got an echo going. You could cut that out. When I was born, for example, I was called Howard.
Okay.
Obviously, it wasn't me, false identity. When I went to college, I kind of... Oh, yeah, everyone called me Howard, but my mom called me Howie. When I went to college, I missed my mom, so I kind of introduced myself to everyone, kind of a new world in college as Howie. So my name changed. And then later, you know, met Srila Prabhupada, the name Narahari, who I'm not sure exactly what that means in terms of my eternal identity. So a question that I often get is, I'm sure you've heard this question before, will we know each other when we go back to the spiritual world? When these identities, when that we've had here, there isn't much reality to it. Mahaprabhu said, Naham vipro nachanapati napi vaishrana shudro gopi patrakama dasa dasa anudasa. He was rejecting any identity that he had within this world. So how do you handle that question? You know, will we know each other when we go back to the spiritual world?
Oh, I don't know if there's any firm pramana for that. So I don't want to just wildly speculate without a pramana. I think that's not a very wise thing to do. I think I'll leave it at that. But I will say that we know that in the spiritual world, all desires are fulfilled. All desires are in relationship to Krishna, and all desires are fulfilled. So if we have some desire in relationship to Krishna, then that is fulfilled, and we will know whatever is in relationship to Krishna. I mean, we also know that it says in Bhagavatam that the fortunate soul in the womb can remember its past 100 births. So it seems reasonable to me that we would remember everything. At the same time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has this very nice series of songs in Gitavali, and toward the end of the series, he writes about how he's this Manjari Gopi and has forgotten everything of the relationships in this world. So
I usually answer the question by saying, let's go there and find out.
Well, there you go. Prabhupada answered that to Akayani when she asked about Krishna being a baby and whether or not Krishna's a baby in the spiritual world. He said, better you chant Hare Krishna and go to the spiritual world and see this for yourself. Mm. But I think this question stems from a basic fear that somehow the spiritual world is going to be deficient in some way. That something I hold near and dear in this world will be absent there, and that I'll be in want. I think that's kind of the basic doubt that underlies that question. Because in this life, we invest a tremendous amount of energy into our relationships and our identity based on those relationships. An unbelievable amount of energy. I put so much time, care, energy, and thought into trying to be a good son or daughter and a good husband, wife, a good mother, father, a good employer or employee, or, you know, member of this group and that group. I just put so, I pour so much care into this. And to think that it's all going to be lost, you know, frankly, it's lost from one life to the next. And we have that that play of the wrong bank account. You know, you're putting your money in someone else's account. So honestly, you know, it's if we're putting our energy into false identities, it doesn't really mean anything. But yeah, we have this fear because we've gone through so many lives, and in each life it is all lost. You know, in my last life I had different parents and I had different spouse and different children and different relatives in a different country and a different job, and I poured all my energy into that identity, and then it was just over. It was just gone. And I had to start all over again as if I had done nothing. And so we think, well, the spiritual world, everything I've done in the material world is all rubbish. So that's our basic fear. You know, I don't want to surrender to Krishna because then I'll lose something. So the basic answer is we won't lose anything. We don't need to worry. Whatever is wonderful and valuable and is eternal, we'll have. And we won't, there's no lack. There's no insufficiency. There's exactly how that plays out, I don't know. As Prabhupada said, chant Hare Krishna, go to the spiritual world and see for yourself. So that, and I would also venture to say that that's different for each of us. We're each individuals. And exactly what it is that we deal with is different. But the main thing is we shouldn't be afraid. In the ultimate reality, where all desires in service are immediately satisfied, we don't have to worry that we're going to be in want of something. And all the only thing we're going to lose is our suffering. So. Okay, we have a question here from Vijay Krishna about how can God is the same as his name. So because in the eternal reality, a name is not simply something tacked on as meaninglessly. In this world, the names really have nothing to do with the thing. You know, but in the spirituality, the name and the thing is the same. It's real. Here is the world of Maya. It's the world of that which is not. And in material illusion, everything is different from what it appears to be. But in spirituality, everything is what it appears to be. There's not a difference between appearance and reality. It's real, it's authentic. And you can say, well, what about, you know, depiction in letters? I mean, Prabhupada also says the Lord's name depicted in letters is the Lord. Because the Lord can also appear in this world as he is. Why not? And you're saying, well, that's limited. So, I've heard this explanation, and I think it's a very good one. So little babies, before they know language, they just make sounds. Very different sounds. And their ability to communicate is limited. But as soon as the sounds take on the form of a language with its vocabulary and its grammar, then you can express unlimited things. So form allows for unlimited. It's not that formless allows for unlimited. Formless is very limited. What you can do with formlessness in sound is very limited. If you want to do unlimited with sound, then you have to give it form. So to say that just because we can understand the Lord as a particular set of sounds or a particular set of letters means we're limiting him. No, that allows us to have unlimited understanding of him. And ultimately, Krishna says that he is the sound in ether. So really, all sound is Krishna. But some particular sounds refer to him very personally. And he is fully present in that sound.
Mother Urmila, if I may, can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
But if God is unlimited, why a name with only five letters and three dots? Why not a name with unlimited number of letters and unlimited number of dots?
Well, that also.
Yes, because God is unlimited.
Well, he has unlimited names. Don't worry. He has unlimited names. Krishna, with just, you're reminding me of when our oldest son was 3 years old and we were in a car coming back from a preaching program and he said, Krishna, that's K-R-S-N-A with three dots, but no dot under the K and no dot under the A. I remember that very clearly. He was 3 years old. That was his first understanding of reading and writing. But don't worry, Krishna has unlimited names with unlimited letters and unlimited dots. Don't worry, that is also a fact. That is also a fact.
Yes, it's there in the Vedas, of course.
Thank yes,
Mother
yes.
Rumi.
And Krishna
Thank
says, and Krishna says, as I said, Krishna says, I am the sound in ether.
Exactly.
Like where I am staying here in New Goloka in Hillsborough, North Carolina, there's a highway very close by. And so it's constant, the roar of the traffic. It's constant. I mean, you kind of forget about it, but it's always there. And right now in my room, there's a humming sound, a constant humming sound from my refrigerator and the modem. You know, that it's a constant background sound. And if I go outside, this is a rural area. So if you go outside, there's going to be some sound from insects and birds. And all those sounds are also Krishna. So there, Krishna is unlimited sound. Don't worry, he's not restricted to five letters and three dots. No worries. No worries. All right, I need to go now. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. Great.